The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. If you like our show, you're going to love Sports for Life on Podcast One. Whether you're a parent looking to create confidence in your child or you want to get to the next level in your own life, let veteran broadcaster Marie Anderson and Olympian Holly McPeak leverage their experience and high-profile guests to help you do it like a boss. Download new episodes of Sports for Life every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One. 60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? Get an offer for your car from TrueCar. That's right, in the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or at home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that easy. After that, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. Hey guys, do you miss when sports networks cover just the news and highlights without the yelling and fake debates? I know I do. That's why I watch CBS Sports HQ. What is CBS Sports HQ? It's the free 24-hour sports network that's built for fans like you and me. I love that I can get tons of highlights, analysis, and instant game reactions. Everything that matters about the game without diving into political and social issues like on other sports networks. And if you enjoy placing some bets or competing against your friends in a fantasy league, their experts are always dishing out their top picks and advice to help me win. So check out CBS Sports HQ. It's always on and always free. No need to pay a subscription fee or have an expensive cable package. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, or Apple TV to start watching today. Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We are live, Sam.
Live.
Here on the YouTube channel. This is great.
It's fancy. The whole new setup leading us in.
We've done live before, but we've got some more things going on behind the scenes that are making it a little bit tighter, which is great.
This is a whole like professional setup. We got a producer in our ear as opposed to just across the room. This is impressive.
Yeah, try not to talk to the producer in your ear. Just
I have never done that.
They call
I have seen people that work for Pro Football Focus that shall remain nameless answer the voice in their ear.
And it wasn't me because you would never call me out.
Correct. During live television, in fact. Yeah. Quite an impressive sight. You know, a voice comes in, tells you to wrap it up. Okay.
You're not supposed to do that.
No, you're not. You're not supposed to do that. Though they don't specifically tell you anywhere not to. It's just one of those... You know, taken as read pieces of information when you're doing TV
or
radio.
Well, we're not formally trained.
This is true.
Full disclosure, we have never gone through formal training. This is all natural, Sam.
Having said that, I have done a master's in international journalism.
Really?
Mm. So technically, I mean, depending on where this all fits.
It's a good thing you're taking over this entire video department here. Yeah.
Depending on where all this fits, you could say that I have had official professional training.
You're formally trained.
Yeah.
All right, so this show today... We're going to hit on a couple pieces of news. First off, Ben Watson from the New England Patriots, a tight end suspended for 4 games. I want to touch on the Giants secondary briefly. A couple things we've done on the YouTube video channel that we're just going to bring to the podcast here. And then we're going to hit the mailbag because we did. You asked for some questions. We got some good ones, ones that I think will take us home, Sam, with some good insights.
I want to get some more MS Paint play diagrams, though, this offseason. I think that was the highlight of last year, was getting stuff drawn up on changing the game of football one MS Paint slide at a time.
When the mailbag becomes more interactive, you know, it's
well, look, I'm not sure I've seen a finer piece of play diagramming than that Hail Mary.
The Hail Mary play.
With, you know, encircling
grab hands
the intended target.
Grab
that
hands.
That was magical. So if we can get a few more of those created during the offseason.
What we really need to do, we've got some connections now. We should probably be able to get one of the refs who does, you know, some of the on-air stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get somebody to pitch a play, and then we get one of the refs on for like a five-minute segment to say yay or nay. Like, this is illegal. Like, stepping on people, move, and all that stuff.
To explain why that's illegal.
Yeah. So something to aspire to. All right, let's start with the Ben Watson news. He was teasing retirement. I don't know if that was because he knew he had taken some kind of supplement. Is that what the rumors were? But he's going to be missing four games. New England essentially brought him out of retirement to pair with Austin Seferian Jenkins, trying to piece together replacing Rob Gronkowski. So now they'll be without Watson for the first four games. Don't think it's going to kill New England initially, but it does hurt their depth at a position where they have to replace one of the best of all time, if not the best.
Yeah. It's interesting that it's the Patriots, though, because if there's one team that probably doesn't care if you're going to miss September, it's the Patriots.
True.
They're not, you know, they're barely turning up for September anyway. If you come to them and you say, look, there's a problem, I'm perfectly willing to sign for another year, one last go around here, but here's the thing. I got popped for something. I'm going to miss 4 weeks at the start of the season.
Sure.
Most teams are like, oh, yeah, that's a deal breaker for us, I'm afraid.
For an older player, too, sometimes it, you know, keeps the wear and tear, because you're pretty much going to be playing 15 or 16 games.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's just take the wear and tear. Save yourself in September, see you in October.
Yeah. So most teams are like, ooh, yeah, that's not going to work for us. The Patriots are like, I mean, we're barely turning up anyway. Yeah. That's ideal. In fact, if anything, we'd prefer that.
Yeah, so they're going to get Ben Watson after game four, so week five. I did a video with our new friend, Solomon Wilcots, our new colleague working here at PFF. We broke down, hey, what is this Patriots offense going to look like next year? They've grabbed N'Keal Harry in the first round, Demaryius Thomas, Dontrell Inman, all these bigger receivers. Is that the way that they're going to try to replace Gronk? You bring in Ben Watson, you bring in Seferian Jenkins. So it is interesting to see which way New England leans here, right? They always seem to adjust on offense and try to be ahead of the times. I don't know if the big receiver is really the under... Everybody, anytime New England makes a move, they're like, oh, that's it. They found the undervalued asset. The big guys that can't separate, they're the undervalued asset. I don't know if that's the thing. But I do believe in different style, different types of playmakers, and I think those guys can contribute in different ways, different from Edelman, different from Philip Dorsett.
Well, we've had this conversation before that what makes the Patriots unique is that they don't have a system, but they do game plans. And week to week, they can be completely different. But it means that on offense in particular, that you've gone through several different iterations of essentially the same system, but they look completely different. You know, you've had this system that used the two tight ends, the Gronkowski and Hernandez. You've had the Randy Moss and Wes Welker era.
They were spreading out when teams were still wearing too tight.
You've had the area where everybody was a slot receiver. Like, they didn't have legitimate big bodies outside. You had everything that worked over the middle. Everybody was an Edelman, an Amendola, or Gronkowski. You didn't have a perimeter threat. And now it's, okay, Gronkowski's gone. What does it look like now? And then you draft N'Keal Harry in the first round. It's like, well, what does that look like? Because if there's what, and N'Keal Harry does a lot of things really well. One of them isn't separate. Like, if you look at his targets, he's not open ever. Now, he makes some spectacular plays despite that. But when you're pulling up a guy's highlight reel after they draft him, you're like, every single one of these catches is, there's a guy draped all over him. That's kind of concerning in a league where the trend right now is to get guys that will get open. Because typically guys that just win contested catches don't at the next level, or at least they don't do it consistently well. The highest people in the NFL in terms of winning contested catches are at like 60-something percent.
Yeah, and it's tough to be that consistent.
Right, which is just about the baseline of, you know, general receptions. So if you're saying the very best at doing this specific skill can only get it done about the baseline of catching, it means most people are nowhere near that, so it's not a good thing. if you're always expecting a quarterback to make the ball contested, that's not a great thing. It was interesting. There was I saw another N'Keal Harry highlight reel or highlight clip show up on Twitter the other day. It was like a bubble screen that, and it was N'Keal Harry turns, you know, nothing into something. Bubble screen, and then he ends up like reversing field seven times and going.
He had multiple plays like that.
Yeah, but this one, it was only nothing because he dropped the bubble screen, which I thought was kind of funny. It's like, drops it, picks it up, now he's in hell because the play's gone, and suddenly he ends up reversing field a couple of times and making a positive play. Like, okay. On the other hand, if he just caught the bubble screen in the first place, maybe it might have been better. But
it's like when you fumble, you know, you bobble the punt a little bit, right, and it screws up the...
He's just this fascinating player because the stuff that he does well, he's really good at. He's a great contested catch guy. He's great after the catch or with the ball in his hands,
right,
however it gets there, whether it's a drop, then a scoop. But he's really good at that stuff. It's just that I don't ever see him get a separation on the outside. So does he become like New England's version of Marcus Colston, like a big slot that operates inside that has some bubble screen trick play kind of capability, like a cross between Marcus Colston and Cordarrelle Patterson?
Does he work the middle of the field a little bit? So that I initially said I think he could replace what they had in Brandon LaFell a few years ago, and that's going back a few years, where LaFell would run, you know, the back shoulder stuff against man coverage, run slants, be, you know, do some things in the red zone, run some shallow crosses, things like that. You can scheme people open too. It's not all, you know, when it comes to Harry. But I also think when you look at how many tight window throws Brady did make to Gronk, right? There are certain times you have to make those, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they have to be replaced by somebody. So is it a N'Keal Harry? Is it a Demaryius Thomas? Is it a Dontrell Inman? I think they're trying to find, all right, when we do have to beat man coverage and nobody's open, because there are a lot of plays like that in the NFL. Nobody is open and you do have to back shoulder. You do have to throw it up and away from coverage. Give us a couple big catch radius guys. So you have a few of those guys competing for some snaps. You have an Edelman that can still get open. And then I think the other interesting aspect for the Patriots is they continue to stack up running backs. They use a fullback more than anybody. Now, they're not a power run team. This whole narrative that all of a sudden it's like, well, the Patriots are weaving when everybody else is bobbing and they're just going to run the ball. Like, they threw the ball 100 times in the first two games,
right,
in the playoffs, right? But they do use James Devlin at fullback more than anyone else. They have Sony Michel, who's more of a runner than a pass catcher. They still have Rex Burkhead, James White, and they drafted Damian Harris. I think we will see more formations, and they've already started this, where there are two legitimate running backs out there, non-Devlin types, and they split one wide, and then one's in the backfield, and that's their way of... They've created mismatches with extra wide receivers before. They've created mismatches with extra tight ends. I think now they're in this, let's create mismatches with extra running backs, right? We put James White out wide, and we put Burkhead in the backfield. Or we put both of them in the backfield, and you can run all sorts of stuff out of that. They did a lot with Cordarrelle Patterson last year, who was essentially a running back slash wide receiver. So I think that's where they're going, is just creating mismatches in different ways without a Gronk.
For years, the thing, maybe the single most defining characteristic of their offense has been finding ways to make you wrong from a personnel standpoint. So, you know, generally before every single play, defenses take a look at who's in the huddle, and then that's how they calculate what personnel they're going to run. So whether you're in base, whether you're in nickel, dime, et cetera, it's all down to the count, right? How many wide receivers, how many running backs, how many tight ends are in the offensive huddle. That determines what we're going to line up with on defense. So the Patriots for years have basically been working on ways to screw that up. So when you look in the huddle, you're wrong, because you look, oh, Cordarrelle Patterson's in there, wide receiver, DB comes on. It's like, oh, crap, now he's in the backfield. He's a running back. We've got a corner on the field. We've screwed up.
That's the biggest mismatch. The Patriots started this back with the late Aaron Hernandez.
Right.
Where it's like, he's
a tight end.
He's a tight end.
Keep a linebacker on the field.
But with him, they were like, oh, he's a wide receiver, so we have to put a DB.
Or a running back.
But then when they turned him into a running back, that's what I'm saying. That's what completely changed the game. Pittsburgh did this a little bit with Ryan Switzer the last couple of years, is put Switzer in the backfield as a runner. Our boy Mike Renner was tweeting about this the other day. It's not a unique idea, but saying, you know, that's kind of like the next mismatch opportunity, is when a guy who's a wide receiver and is accounted for as a wide receiver becomes a running back. And the Patriots have dabbled with this before. They'll start Edelman in the backfield and then motion him out and all that stuff. So I think it's either guys that shouldn't be carrying the ball that are carrying the ball, or multiple guys who can carry the ball.
I mean, the Patriots, I think, have probably been the best team at doing that for years.
Yep.
And they do it more consistently than anybody else. There are a lot of teams that have specific motions, you know, and try and do it for a key situation. It's third and eight. Let's try and manufacture a mismatch because we need to pick up 8 yards. The Patriots, I think, do it as a staple part of the offense more than anybody else.
Yeah. And I honestly, I think they've been more creative than ever the last couple of years. Yeah. It used to be like, all right, Welker's generally going to be in one of these couple spots. And the last couple of years, they were really, really interchangeable with all of their receivers.
And I think their system lends itself to this more than others because, you know, the way it works, you can run everything from every personnel and right. formation. And it's just easier to start messing around with stuff like that than it is for, you know, pick another random offense. Andy Reid's offense is going to be harder to do that because everybody needs to know everybody else's specific role with the verbiage, et cetera, et cetera. You need to like cross train players by position. The Patriots, you don't. You just need to understand where you're lining up and then you're good to go.
All right, let's really quickly discuss the New York Giants, their secondary. I did a whole video breaking them down, said, hey, this is an improved unit. Even without Landon Collins, it's not so much that they're taking this massive leap forward, but I do like the fact that the way they attacked the cornerback position in the draft and the different style cornerbacks that they've brought in. Sam Beal from the supplemental draft, and of course DeAndre Baker in the first round, Julian Love in the fourth round. Julian Love might be cross-training a little bit at safety in the future. Jabril Peppers comes in to more of a strong safety role. The actual free safety role, Antoine Bethea, Michael Thomas, Michael Thomas, excellent special teamer. Bethea getting a little bit older. I think they're both placeholders.
A little bit older?
He's old.
Yeah.
Placeholders. Grant Haley can play a little bit of slot. So they've brought in guys. They can find a pretty good starting five is the point here. The Giants, based off what they've done this offseason.
God, I Googled it because I assumed that Antoine Bethea, given how long he's been playing, would actually be older than us.
Nope. What's he, like 34? That's ancient for safety, though.
Right, and yet still significantly younger than we are.
Yeah.
That's sad. That's just bummed out my Tuesday morning.
Yeah, I've said that before. It's, you know, an odd time in life when, like, the guy that's getting old and, you know, sports. Okay,
I've like, passed the point where getting old is our age. I thought, though, like, he's old. Like, he's been old for a while.
Yeah. He's like, slow. He must barely even walk.
Yeah. Like, he must be older than us. No, not even close.
Young buck.
What's really interesting to me about this Giants secondary, for a smug self sense of satisfaction, is that Janoris Jenkins has ended up being the player that we said he was when the Giants threw all the money at him and then played really well for 1 year. And everyone's like, ha ha, you guys are idiots. He just needed the right system, and now he's an all-pro.
Yeah, he's been a one-year wonder.
Right, he had that one all-pro season, then he went back to being the same guy he was in St. Louis back then.
Which was pretty good.
Which was a guy who will make some plays, give up a ton of bad plays, and you end up with this volatile, you know, hit-or-miss cornerback. And that's kind of what he's ended up being.
One of the worst things, I think, to happen to the Giants was having a good 2016 season. Sounds weird, right?
But massively overachieve and make everyone think that they're contenders.
Completely overachieved in 2016. Eli was actually worse that year than he was in 17 and 18. These last couple of years, Eli was like more reasonable than he was that particular year when they won all those games. But the defense, you know, Landon Collins was a defensive player of the year candidate, career year from Janoris Jenkins. They were excellent defensively that year. DRC back there making plays. I mean, it was a very good year for them, but they also weren't a 10 or 11 win. What did they ended up with? 10 or 11 wins. They were not that good. So you go into 2017 with these high expectations, and it's like, no, look at this roster. It is not great.
Right.
And 17 and 18 has kind of been the same story. Now, Daniel Jones move aside, we said, look, we liked the Giants draft. We liked a lot of the things that they did, what they've brought in. And if you just look in isolation, they've done some nice things on the offensive line the last couple of years. They've done some nice things in the secondary, at least, you know, throwing assets at it. And I think that will do them well in the long term in this rebuilding process now for the
right.
Giants.
They're interesting because I think that their ability to identify talent is good. So they find good players, I think, reasonably consistently or as good as anybody in, you know, the NFL. And it's like the strike rate generally for identifying talent is not good. across, you know, league-wide. Generally speaking, people aren't dramatically better or worse than anybody else, but everybody's bad in terms of your strike rate. But I think the Giants in that spectrum are as good as most people. It's just that they haven't worked out the value component of it. It's like, ah, this guy's good, we'll draft him, even though, okay, but he's good at a position that doesn't make a big impact, so that's not a good place to spend your assets. So the Drabil Peppers thing, I think, is a great example, right? In fact, both trades with Cleveland. In neither case did the Giants get demonstrably worse players than the ones they shipped out. But what you did is send away two of the most valuable positions in the game and acquire two of the least valuable positions.
Remind everybody what those were.
So there's picks and stuff involved, but essentially the players traveling either way is Odell Beckham leaves and Olivier Vernon leaves. So star wide receiver, star pass rusher, or at least primary pass rusher.
Top 20.
Right. Coming back the other way are Jabril Peppers, strong safety, and
Kevin Zeitler,
guard.
Yeah.
So,
and of course, they got a first-round pick, which they used
exactly. So there's
on
picks
Dexter Lawrence
as well. It's not like a straight thing, but the right. idea is the players you've targeted in these deals, you've got rid of two of the most important positions, pass catcher and pass rusher, and you bring in a guy who really needs to play in the box as a strong safety and a guard. And those are essentially the two most replaceable positions in the NFL, bar maybe running back.
I will say, though, all that said, so that's those points are taken. We made those points back during free agency when those trades happened. The way they attacked the draft, though, going with three cornerbacks, using actual picks on three cornerbacks, getting Dexter Lawrence in the middle, you know, who's not just a two-down nose tackle. The expectation is he can rush the passer.
Well, he needs to be because the numbers, the two-down thing is now a misnomer, right? Two-down is now one-down, maybe. Like the NFL average last year for base defense, which is what those two-down players play on, whether it's a run-thumping linebacker, whether it's a nose tackle that leaves on third downs, those guys are base defense average 25% league-wide.
Right.
And that's just of defensive snaps. So that's not even counting fourth downs that are mostly special teams plays. 25%. So at most, those two-down players are a one-down player, and it's really half a down now.
But
so
for a guy like him, it's can he rush the passer enough, and there's still value in stopping the run in those lighter boxes in a nickel set. The point is, yes, he needs to play a lot of snaps to justify the first-round pick, but the fact that they have maybe the worst edge rush situation in the NFL mm-hmm. with guys like Kareem Martin. They did draft O'Shane Zimenez from Old Dominion, undersized, some huge question marks. Guys like Avery Moss might be seeing snaps. I mean, they're just not really equipped off the edge. Lorenzo Carter, Marcus Golden was a pretty good, hey, let's see what he has left. I mean, but they are really Band-Aids left and right here is what they're using. The fact that they didn't go crazy, you know, squeezing a guy in there, a Montez Sweat, whatever it was, right? And they did attack the secondary. This is something that we would probably get behind based off all our findings, say coverage over pass rush. So they'll be an interesting test case. Of course, a lot depends on how good DeAndre Baker is, the first-round corner, how good Julian Love is, a guy we had as a second-round type of corner. He got him in the fourth. Can Janoris Jenkins be a little bit better than he was the last couple of years? Jabril Peppers, is he used in the proper role?
Sam Beal.
You know, supplement. So they got all these pieces and interested to see how that all works out. And I think the Giants and the Ravens are kind of the two test cases where they've put resources in the secondary. The Ravens are more proven in the secondary. They have legit one of the best top fives. Mm-hmm. But both teams, very limited pass rush options.
Yeah.
So I want to see how they make that work.
The Giants in particular, I think, are just a work in progress at the moment. Like this... I don't think, like you said, the 2011 season sort of put in people's heads, or not 2011, 2016 season put in people's heads that this team was a lot closer than it was.
Right.
And they're really in the midst of a massive rebuild, one that A, is going to be essentially determined by what happens to quarterback, whether they were right or not about Daniel Jones. But B, I mean, this entire roster essentially needs to be turned over, and they're just starting that process now.
All right, let's get to
mailbag.
The mailbag.
Questions?
Yeah, we have some questions.
Nice. What do we got?
I
got
to fire them. I got to go find. You sent them to me on Skype.
All right, I got them.
The questions.
Well, the first one, somebody asked, had you taken to the gym and or dieting? Because apparently you're starting to look pretty trim.
Fatter than ever.
Fatter than ever?
Yeah.
Wait, hang on.
I went to the gym 2 weeks ago.
That's true. What's the scale say now?
We're between 278 and 283.
Well, that's not fatter than ever then. I've
been up there
before. You've topped 285.
Yeah, but I've been, when I was in training, I was up in that high 270s with muscle. That muscle has slowly evolved to fat.
It's interesting though, because when the occasion that you and I will go to the gym, and by that occasion, that means when I can actually get you there.
This week, we're doing it. We want to go this week. Not today. I got lunch.
You know, Steve doesn't do a whole lot of gym stuff anymore. But when he does, just by being your size, you remain absurdly strong at certain things.
Thank you.
Just by virtue of being a giant human being. Yeah. Like, you are literally 100 pounds heavier than me in existence. That's vaguely impressive.
Just get out
like
there 100 pounds, curls and everything.
Yeah, 100 pounds is a lot of weight that you're just permanently carrying
around.
Long
levers is tough, though.
It is. So certain things, you're in trouble because, you know, your arms are 9 foot long, and that's just a lot of stabilizing that needs to happen. But there are certain things that you're just irritatingly strong at right out of the box, you know?
Usually back stuff.
Yeah, anything back-related, pulling, you know, it's ridiculous.
Spent a lot of time pulling.
So anyway, that's that question answered. Steve hasn't been going to the gym except that one time last week.
All right. People are asking about this QB tier thing.
Ah, yes. This is right in your wheelhouse. You're all about the tiers.
I think tiers are very important. I haven't looked at the phenomenon that's going around. I'm trying to...
avoid Twitter.
Trying to take a step back from Twitter a little bit. I'm trying not to get sucked in. Not that I don't like the interaction. I still want to put my thoughts out there and interact with the fans. I need to not get sucked into like my timeline and getting angry about stuff that doesn't matter and all that. I'm trying to focus on bigger things.
Can I give you the most interesting thing about the QB tier thing to me?
What's that?
It's not who you put where, which is obviously what, like, the purpose of the whole thing. It's what you designate the tiers as being in the first place that interests me.
Yeah.
So we had this discussion the other week about the tiers being essentially related to money and team building.
Right.
Like, that's what's starting to interest me the most. It's not, you know, elite, very good, good, average, bad, whatever. It's, you've got this golden area of great quarterback, rookie contract. That's like the jackpot. And then below that, it's just great quarterback, regardless of how much you're stuck paying him. Then you get into this gray area and the sort of different tiers of, all right, now I've got an okay quarterback who I need to pay a decent amount of money, or I just throw a dart at a draft pick.
Honestly, so we, going back to the QB clustering thing that George and Eric worked on, and this came from us having back and forth discussions on, you know, how do we define quarterbacks? And then they kind of let the math shape these clusters. And they came up with six basic clusters. And here's how they shake out. Cluster one is your elite quarterback. And it's all based off of positive and negative grades in the quarterback system, essentially. So your tier one quarterback, it's Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, over time, consistently sitting in tier one. And they make a lot of throws. They don't miss a ton of throws. They make big time throws. They don't have a ton of turnover worthy throws, right? So those guys are pretty clear, right? Tiers two and three, clusters two and three, because they're not tiers, right? Clusters two and three are where the majority of the quarterbacks in the NFL probably fall. And the interesting thing there is, it's not that cluster two is better than three. They're both kind of equivalent as far as quality, but the style is different. You've got boom or bust versus a safer prospect, right? So you've got your Alex Smiths versus your Jameis Winstons in clusters two and three. So cluster two is more of your, I actually forget which is which, but I think cluster two is your safer, not going to turn the ball over as much, not going to make as many positive throws, but he's going to keep you in games, that type of guy, versus the cluster three guy, which is going to make more positives than cluster two, but also more negatives. So high positives, high negatives versus low positives, low negatives, you know, for just simplicity's sake. And 20-something quarterbacks fit into those top three tiers. 20 to 25 quarterbacks.
That's probably what's really interesting about this. Whether you're dividing it up by the sort of money salary cap aspect or whether you're dividing it up stylistically, there are so much more interesting ways to look at it than just better than the other guy.
Right. Well, because I think a big part of it is okay, if you have Carson Wentz or you have Deshaun Watson or you have Alex Smith, what do you do? Or what should you expect? That's a big part of it. What do you expect from this guy? And with Alex Smith, you say, okay, I know we like to poo-poo coaching, you know, QB winning percentage and all that stuff, but the fact that Alex Smith has consistently pretty much been on a winner, I think has spoken to his style of taking care of the ball, right? Now, do you want him to go out? So I think he's capable of going out to win a game for you here and there, but he either chooses not to, or stylistically you say, okay, we just want him to get us on the green, get us close. Whereas you do have a guy like Carson Wentz, the more you watch him, he can go win a game for you. Deshaun Watson can go win a game for you, but they could also lose it. Mm-hmm. Jameis Winston is similar, but at a lower tier than those guys. Carson Palmer was similar to, say, Carson Wentz. Cam Newton, those guys that can go win a game for you, but they'll lose one for you as well. So I think knowing what you have is important. And then if you're an organization, if you have a Carson Wentz, I don't think his MVP season of 2017, MVP caliber season, is real Carson Wentz. I thought that was one of his peaks, just like Cam Newton's peak was 2015. Can he hit? Now, a peak doesn't mean it's the top you'll ever hit. It means in a 10-year career, you might hit three peaks, and that's going to get you pretty close.
That's the other aspect about all this, right, is when. So you
in any, all, but it could be any given year.
That's the thing. So when you're ranking all these quarterbacks, what are you ranking? Are you ranking them at their peak? Are you ranking them coming off their lowest ebb? Are you ranking somewhere their baseline, what you expect them to be going forward? Because, like, right now, you would say that Cam Newton is not good. But we've seen Cam Newton play like
an
MVP. Well,
that's you, because you just speak in
not
black
me,
and
other
white.
People. I've looked at the tiers. People would say that he's not good. Literally not good. That was their tier, not good. So
really,
people out there would suggest that Cam Newton is not good. But we've seen Cam Newton play at an MVP level. So if you're ranking Cam Newton, what do you rank him as? Because when is a relevant part of the discussion?
Yeah, I think 7 years of information, 7 or 8 years that he's had of information is more valuable than the 1 year of 2015. But you know that the 2015 year is in there. Newton's interesting because when you break him down and what he's done as a runner and all the touchdowns and all these different things, I've seen people put this, well, he's a Hall of Famer. Put this Hall of Fame case out there.
God.
But I still don't think throw for throw, he's been a top 10 quarterback more than maybe twice.
Right.
Once or twice. I mean, 2015 was very, very good. Right? And then there's a couple other years, I forget specifically, where he was like in and around the top 10 in our quarterback grades, but there's a lot of years at 19th and 20th. And I know last year he had the shoulder injury and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've learned I don't want to piss off all the Panthers fans all the time.
Well,
he had the shoulder.
I'm working on my list of NFL teams.
When we preview the season, we'll tell you how bad they were. But Cam regressed back into what he was in 2016 and 17 after the shoulder injury. So essentially you take his numbers in 16, 17, and 18. They're almost identical across the board. Positives and negatives and accuracy percentage and all these different things. And so last year he kind of regressed with the shoulder, but kind of back to where he was anyway. And I watched a little bit more of Cam this weekend, actually, while I was, you know, traveling and on vacation. And, you know, you see that it really is just like makes a great throw, throws the deep out, throws this, you know, nice pass where it's like, that's an NFL throw. And then he makes the same pass and leaves it behind for what should have been a easy pick six, right? So that has been, I think, the story of Cam's career. He has to be. He's barely a top 50. He's in the 10 to 15 range at best when you're ranking the best quarterbacks. But yes, in any given year, it's not surprising to see him as a top five guy because he's in that volatile group. So he could be top five or he could be 25th. And we have actually seen that in his career. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think so. The bottom line with all this is I think the most important part of the ranking of the quarterbacks thing is what exactly you're setting your tiers as. Because that's way more relevant than the actual list or where the quarterbacks sit. It's what you're determining that by.
We could do this before the season. I mean, I really think if we're talking a potential tier one quarterback that you feel most, you just feel all this is playing the odds, right? You feel best about these guys being in the top 10 in any given year in PFF grades. There's 10 guys that in the NFL currently right now that I think have separated them from the rest. And then there's the Then there's the safe guys, and then there's the boomer bust guys. And if you put Watson and Wentz and Stafford and Newton and all those guys in the boomer bust, then that gives you, it's not a cop out, but that gives you leeway. It's like, oh, when Stafford becomes a top eight quarterback this year, yeah, that makes sense. That's what he is.
Even those 10 guys at the top, though, in any given year, two of them are going to have crappy years and not be in that top 10.
So that's the other thing, too. So let's go back to the draft class 2 years ago. Baker Mayfield versus Sam Darnold versus Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, and all that stuff. I even said, as much as we loved Baker Mayfield, think he's better than the rest of the group, and there's a big step down from him to Darnold to Rosen to Allen and all those guys, I said there will be 1 or 2 years, maybe 3 years, where Darnold is better than Baker, or Rosen has 1 or 2 years where he's the best, right? I mean, that's fair, and this is what I said about the Watson, Mahomes, Trubisky class. In the right situation, like, I don't know who's going to be the best coming out. We weren't as high, as a group, we weren't as high on Mahomes as maybe we should have been. But if Watson randomly has a better year than Patrick Mahomes in the next 5 years, is that going to shock you?
No.
I mean, Trubisky might shock us more now, but coming out, we thought that they were similar. We still need to see some improvement there. But that's the whole point when you're ranking these guys. The Jameis Winston, Mariota debate a couple years ago, it was pretty even. You know, some people liked one, some people liked the other, and they've both been similar players overall, but they've gotten there slightly differently.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got to move on.
Sorry.
I like this question.
I could rant about QB tiers all day, though. I'm sorry.
I opened the
door.
Did
that answer the question, at least?
God, I don't think so. It was my fault. I opened the door. I knew what was behind. I knew what was inside Pandora's box, and I opened it anyway, and now all of the evil of the world is flooding out of your
mouth.
Look
at you moving me along.
Towards...
This never happens.
Anyway, so I didn't give... Who was that question from?
At Advanced Lazy.
No, I think that's the next one.
Oh.
So this one
so
is at
it.
Advanced Lazy / Lazier Than Average is this Twitter
Lazier
name.
Than Average, yeah.
Has PFF discussed grading coaches? And if so, how would you go about it?
Yes. Yes, we have.
Okay.
Yes, we've started. The most basic way to do it, I think, is... First off, let's just take grades aside.
Also, let's make the point early that this is unlikely to ever be something that will see the light of the day or the light of day in terms of public because, you know, we work with all 32 NFL
right.
teams.
Maybe on the positive end,
already,
we'll give you like our top five
right.
here and there.
It's already hard enough to get those guys listening to us before you tell them the crap.
We had a team come out last year and say, a GM basically say, hey, where do our coaches rank? Mm. And they weren't high.
Yeah.
Wasn't, you know, puts us in a bind behind the scenes.
Exactly.
So I think the basic layer that you want to look at is how does a team produce either offensively or defensively outside of their grades. Now, understanding that grades are somewhat dependent on the coaches, putting guys in position to succeed and all that stuff. But for example, Arizona a few years ago created a ton of pressure and did a great job with their blitz package where guys didn't necessarily grade well. So if a guy gets this unblocked sack or pressure, we could say, look, if the grades from a pass rush aren't great, but you're creating a ton of pressure and havoc and sacks from blitzes, there's something schematic going on there. The other way around on offense is if you have a bunch of easy throws, essentially, that turn into big plays, is one way to say, now, some of that's playmaker-driven, but a lot of it's scheme-based, and that's how you isolate the coach, I think, from the players. Separate grades and production.
Yeah, a lot of the time, grades match up well with production, and it's easy to draw the straight line. This guy is playing really well, therefore his production is fantastic. Everybody's happy.
Right.
Sometimes the two don't mesh. So you get a guy whose grade is not great, but the production is off the charts, and everyone goes, hey, PFF's wrong because this guy's playing better than your grade is. Like, well, or he's not playing better. He's not playing as well as his statistics suggest, but something else is happening to make the production better. And you think of Trubisky and Chicago Bears and Matt Nagy last year is a perfect example of this, right? We got crap all year long. Hey, Trubisky's way better than you think he is because look at all these numbers. Like, okay, but heading into the year, we were telling you all about what a great offensive system this is that Matt Nagy's going to be bringing over from Kansas City, all the RPOs, all the designed easy plays, all the kind of the things that should help out a quarterback to make it easier to produce, and therefore if he just plays, you know, reasonably, that offense is going to be virtually unstoppable. So all of those things happened. Like, the offense, the system was still great, therefore Trubisky's numbers looked great, but the answer of what was driving that was a large part of the coaching. So understanding that relationship, and when the grades don't necessarily sync with the production, a huge proportion of that is attributed directly to coaching and to scheming.
And even if you look at a guy like Patrick Mahomes, whose grade was spectacular last year, he also had Andy right. Reid is one of our top play callers,
which is
last
why
year.
He winds up with 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns.
Right.
Like,
so
when the two come together, you end up with absurd production.
You have an historic season like Patrick Mahomes did. So there are ways to do that. I think the other way to do it that we're continuing to explore is at an individual player basis. How do their grades and or production match from one coach to the other? So if you have a guy like, say, Trent Brown with the Patriots, where he struggled in a certain system, and then he was really good under Kyle Shanahan, and he was good under Dante Scarnecchia, can you put a line in the sand and say, okay, this coach had him and he wasn't great, and then this coach had him and he was good, and this coach had him and he was good, and you try to, you know, run the numbers on that too?
The other thing we will be able to do is essentially do it on a play calling basis in terms of when should you have gone for it on fourth down.
Yeah, that's a whole different
right.
aspect.
That
yep.
kind of thing. So we've got a system on the back end. George and Eric have been working on this system. They've they've dubbed PFF Walsh, which essentially tells you when you should go, you know, the probability of winning, win probability on given certain situations. So you'll be able to tell which coaches went for it when they shouldn't have, which coaches played the numbers correctly, and who was just, you know, essentially guessing. So we'll be able to quantify which guys are actually playing the odds correctly and which guys aren't.
Kev Cole, who we just hired to join the R&D department, is asking who the best graded coaching staff is in the NFL.
Huh.
We'll find out when you get into the office, Kev. that's about it. Ask George. Just send George and Erica a text. I know Kansas City, I know last year offensively, Kansas City was up there. New England was up there. New Orleans was up there. Maybe no surprise. All very good offenses, all great quarterbacks as well, but they also had really good play callers in there. The one last thing I'll add on that, for all the flack that Chip Kelly got, he... Interesting.
Is that music?
For all the flack that
Chip...
Are we getting... There's music in my ear. Are you guys hearing this too? We're very professional here. This is... That's how we do it, right?
Yeah.
We talked about not talking.
Well, I thought that was
the
like
headset.
The, you know, the hook... Coming in
have
from
we gone too long
to grab people off?
We have rambled quite a
we
bit.
We have. We need to be out of here soon because there's people waiting to meet me right now.
Oh, okay. So I won't even mention the Chip Kelly thing. But he did a good job of scheming open throws.
One last question.
Historically.
And this is a challenge, Steve. Keep your answer to 1 minute or less.
Fine.
This guy from hashtag just robbed the safe on Twitter. Okay. Do you think players like Rashawn Gary, rated low in PFF, can improve with NFL coaching and become top tier at their position?
I think they could definitely improve. I think, like we've said throughout the entire draft process, though, we're just playing the odds on this. The idea that Rashawn Gary will dramatically improve at the NFL level is possible, yet a low probability. Mm-hmm. Now, if he does have good coaching, and maybe you combine that with a move to the interior and you take advantage of his skill set and he is a freak athletically and he hasn't played a ton of football at Michigan. All those things kind of add up and you've got this, you know, perfect storm of, you know, Gary, right scheme, right coach, see some improvement. Absolutely possible, but it's just risky. It's right. risky at the 12th pick and it's risky to expect that at the next level. And here's the other way of looking at upside and all that stuff. You need this and this and this and this to all go right for Rashawn Gary to hit, where there are other players where you just need maybe like two things to go right,
right,
or maybe not much else to go right. That's the whole thing, right? This whole idea of upside and the idea that it's this much higher, all upside is you need more variables to hit to get to where maybe other players already are.
That was my point last year with Baker Mayfield,
right,
by the way. People were always saying, well, Darnold has got, he's young and he can do this. And there were like five different things. You're like, okay, if all of those go right, you end up with a guy who might be as good as Baker Mayfield is.
Yeah.
Or you could just take Baker Mayfield. Like, why would you ever pick the other guy, number one, ahead of the guy that's already there? Because if all of these things go right, he could be 2 percentage points better.
And real quick, Renner did describe this really well when we discussed Gary and said, look, if he runs a 1.5 10-yard dash and the next guy runs a 1.55, I mean, it's a difference, but it doesn't mean the 1.5 gives you this much
it's
more
like
upside.
6 inches.
It's minimal, right? So he's not that much better of an athlete than, say, the next guys who are already better football players.
The point with all this stuff is that it's not a linear mathematical equation, right? It's not that this guy can't, this guy can. You know, you don't just add them up and say, well, that's a great player. Like, almost all players can do certain things. You know, players with incredible athleticism, of course, could be much better because they have the tools to do it. You match them up with all pros with the same tools, you know, okay, the ability is there.
Right.
It's just how likely is it that it'll prove all the things that aren't letting them hit that potential right now. The only occasion, there are very few absolutes where you're like, there is no chance, none, that guy becomes
the next guy.
Well, so Josh Allen, right? Josh Allen could. There's absolutely...
Josh Allen, the quarterback.
Yes. Josh Allen, the quarterback. There are absolutely the tools there where you say, okay, he could put it all together and suddenly become an all-pro. Definitely the potential is there. Christian Hackenberg, no.
Literally zero.
There was literally zero chance that he could ever become a top-tier quarterback. But those are very, very rare, those instances of no chance, zero, yeah. Never going to happen.
Yeah, that's why people are like, oh, is Josh Allen the next Christian Hackenberg? We're like, no. I mean, he had his 2016 year at Wyoming was really good. And, you know, there was some
things there. He's got the arm. He's huge. He can jump over Anthony Barr.
Yeah.
All those things.
There could be a year where he has 25 passing touchdowns, another eight rushing, and it's like, pretty good year. Josh Allen.
We're done.
All right, that's it.
We're out.
Sam has meetings.
I have meetings.
Mr.
You're coming into them as well, though, remember?
Oh, I'm in this?
Yeah.
The 10 o'clock?
A little bit.
All right, so
I just need your looming presence.
We are senior management here at PFF. People. We have many things to do, so we're going to wrap up the podcast. We might do a bonus podcast, though. I don't want to promise anything. Might do a bonus podcast.
Yeah, now you're getting it. How's promise.
No promises.
Tease.
Under-promise, over-deliver. It's what we do here at PFF. We've also over-delivered on PFF Elite and PFF Edge. Go check out those products because they're 365 days of access, and it's a great time to get in. We'll talk to you at the very least next Monday, and maybe that's a voice.
Ooh.
That was a voice crack.
Yeah, what happened there?
Redo that. Oh, wait, we're live.
Yeah, we're live.
All right, fine. We'll just see you next Monday or maybe on a bonus podcast. Thanks, guys. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/pro football focus NFL.